Good morning, Brew Daily Show. I'm Neil Fryman.
And I'm Toby Howell.
Today, New York to Paris in 3 hours. We, as supersonic air travel, plots its grand return.
Then Nike is getting lapped by the competition right now. Is the sportswear giant no longer the top shoe dog? It's Monday, March 25th. Let's ride.
With March Madness in full swing, Morning Brew thought we'd join in on the fun with a bracket of our own. It is not about basketball. It is about the greatest invention of all time. The Esteem Selection Committee, which was me and Toby and a couple other employees here, selected 64 inventions from human history that will compete for the top prize. Contenders will advance through the bracket from a fan vote, so it's all up to you. You can vote at Morning Brew's main social media channels, at Morning Brew on both Twitter and Instagram. And the first round gets underway today at about 10 a.m. Eastern. You might be curious about the number one seeds. They are the wheel, fire, electricity, and the internet. Toby, what are some first round matchups you're keeping your eye on?
Those are powerhouses, but here are some matchups I'm looking at from every region. In the north, I think email in the 14 seed could make a run just because the audience is Morning Brew readers. They kind of love email. The matchup I have my eye on is beer versus the lawnmower in the 3 versus 14. They both complement each other so well. Why do we have to pick one? Moving to the south, I'm most excited about the 2 versus 15 matchup, which is penicillin versus snorkel. I just love the fact that we exist in a universe where those two get to square off. I think the committee criminally underseeded coffee in the West region. We put that in the 8 seed, and I can see it pulling off the upset of electricity if it makes it to the Sweet 16. Finally, in the East, I'm all in on the air fryer in the 11 seed. It's up against toothbrush, but my toothbrush never gave me a perfectly crispy salmon fillet. But please join in on the fun. Go follow us at Morning Brew. We'll be posting at 10 a.m. Eastern today. It's going to be a great time, so we hope to see you there. Now let's hear a quick word from our friends over at Factor. Neil, I don't know how I never put this together, but Factor is named Factor because the most important factor in your overall health and wellness is food.
I, too, am a little shocked you never put two and two together.
Wait, you're saying you knew this the whole time?
Of course I did. JK, no, I'm just making you feel bad. I had no idea either.
Thank you. I was reading an interview with the co-founder from a few years ago, and I was proud that I learned that. I also learned that Factor is obsessed with nailing the, quote, time to mouth.
Ah, the TDM. I'm familiar.
Yes, Factor's time to mouth is 2.5 minutes. Simply grab one of their meals from your fridge, fresh, never frozen, toss it in the microwave, and voila, restaurant quality nutrition in under 3 minutes.
Still can't believe you didn't know why it was called Factor, Toby.
If you want to get a taste of the best time to mouth in the biz, head to factormeals.com/morningbrew50. Then use code morningbrew50 to get 50% off. That's factormeals.com/morningbrew50 with code morningbrew50 to snag a 50% discount. If the U.S. power grid was in orange, big tech companies are squeezing every last bit of juice out of it, seeds and all. There is just insane demand for power in America right now, and we're not producing enough of it. In Georgia, demand for industrial power in the next decade is about 17 times higher than recently forecasted, and utility providers project they will need double the amount of power over the next 5 years than previously anticipated. A lot of it comes down to the rise of AI and the power-hungry data centers needed to train these models. The nation's 2,700 data centers are eating up 4% of the country's total electricity output, which is forecasted to grow to 6% by 2026. And according to one forecast from a key energy conference last week, by 2030, the surge in AI means U.S. data centers may gobble up more power than all households in the country. Toss in the demands of crypto mining operations, and you have two extremely power-hungry industries that are putting immense strain on our already strained grids.
Yeah, this reminds me of the Froyo boom in the 2000s. Except data centers don't taste as good and they consume a lot more electricity. Just fascinating how these new types of data centers have existed for a long time for cloud computing and things like that. But the ones that power large language models that allow Large language models like ChatGPT, Gemini, all the ones that the big tech companies are rolling out, are facing huge constraints because of transmission lines. It's just kind of an interesting thing that the world, the natural resources that we have or our built environment is really putting a huge blocker on the potential development of AI.
A lot of these kind of quotes I read from people familiar with the power industry was about how do we get the forecast for the power needed so wrong? And it is mm-hmm. because we've had these unexpected industries prop up. I mean, the transitions from gas powered vehicles to electric powered vehicles, EVs, was already going to put a ton of strain on. Then AI kind of came out of nowhere and added another immense strain. And you also have the crypto industry, which, I mean, 10 years ago, people weren't forecasting to be a big energy suck, but it is right now. So all of a sudden, you're forecasting these power. I mean, the Georgia stat of 17 times higher. It's insane. How are you off by a factor of 17 times?
They don't know. They were freaking out. They were like, how do we get this off by a factor of 17? There's also another layer here, which is EVs, Bitcoin mining, data centers, but also just general factories. There's a huge factory boom right now in the United States, thanks to the Inflation Reduction Act is doling out hundreds of billions of dollars in subsidies. And we have factory investment in the United States that's at a 50-year high. There are 155 factories coming online or being expanded right now in the country. And that's also putting further strain on the grid. So you have just a triple, quadruple whammy going on, putting a lot of strain on power supplies in the United States.
Potentially a fifth whammy is the fact that all the good spots at kind of the power lunch table are already taken. It used to be that you put your data centers near kind of these major cities, these made with a lot of tech workers, good internet connection, places like the Silicon Valleys of the world. But those places are long tapped out. There's no space to add more data centers there. So now companies are turning to places like Columbus, Ohio, Altoona, Iowa, Fort Wayne, Indiana. And these places don't necessarily have the grid in place to support these very power hungry operations. So it's kind of a good and bad thing because you want to bring some sort of economic development to your area, but you also don't want to put this immense strain on your grid, which you haven't forecasted for.
Yeah. There's also great concern that this strain on the grid will reverse or delay our transition to green energy. There are a bunch of states that have proposed new gas-fired power plants to be able to handle the demand or have delayed the phase-out of coal plants. So there is a very important and interesting climate change angle here, but we have to move on. How incredible would it be to board a plane at JFK, throw on Dune, and then land in London before the movie's over? Sounds like science fiction, but it may become reality soon because supersonic air travel is so back. More than 20 years after the final flight of the Concorde, a company called Boom Supersonic is trying to make sonic booms great again. On Friday, it hit a major milestone in its quest to return commercial supersonic aviation to the skies, taking its prototype aircraft XB-1 on a successful test drive in the Mojave Desert. The XB-1 is what's known as a demonstrator. It's just a small prototype to try out some things, and it barely got over 280 miles per hour on the flight, well short of the speed of sound, Mach 1, which is about 760 miles per hour. But eventually, hopefully by the end of the decade, Boom hopes to build a much bigger plane called the Overture that can shuttle people between New York and London at 1.7 times the speed of sound, taking just over 3 hours. Toby, are you hyped?
I am hyped, but the hype comes with a lot of asterisks here because, again, it is cool to see a plane in the air, but this is nothing close to the actual plane that they eventually hope to build because they aren't even testing out the engines that they hope to use right now. These had kind of normal engines that have been in service for several decades. They're hoping to develop a new engine called the Symphony for their Overture aircraft. There's a little, symphonic play there for you people. But it is interesting because they've recently kind of scrapped their partnership with Rolls-Royce, who they were using to help develop the engines. Now they're going at it alone. So there's a lot of question marks around this, but the general thrust of it is very exciting. Who doesn't get excited for supersonic air travel?
I know. And if you are, plugged into the aviation industry, people talk about the Concorde in hushed tones. It's really this mythological aircraft. It came online in the 70s and did the transatlantic crossing, set the record for the fastest this crossing of the Atlantic by a civil aircraft in 1996. It flew from New York to London in 2 hours, 52 minutes. It actually happened. It was retired in 2003 after a glorious run. The economics didn't work out actually at all. It was way too expensive, way too lumbering. There was also a fatal crash involving the Concorde. So I think there's a lot of enthusiasm about bringing something like this back in a more economical way, because supersonic air travel is really tough to make the financials work out right.
Yeah, and the financials still aren't quite adding up for me, because the Overture seats right around 64 passengers compared to, I mean, an Airbus A380 can take over 853 people across the Atlantic. Also, the Boomjet absolutely guzzles fuel at this insane rate. So who knows if you can, I mean, I still see the same problems that confronted the Concorde confronting Boom here. It was good for Boom though, too, because part of the reason why you need to have these test flights is not only just to show you're making progress, but it's also kind of a fundraising tool. The CEO cited SpaceX as kind of the blueprint for stuff like this. Is you do a test flight, maybe it goes well, maybe it doesn't, but you have to show you're testing, you're making progress. And so this was the first step on that, even if it was an undersized aircraft without the real engines in place. Let's move on. Nike is in a slump. It's losing market share to competing brands like On and Hoka in the running market. Its recent signature basketball shoe launched with Devin Booker was a bit of a flop, and its stock is down 16% over the last year compared to a 40% jump for its rival Adidas. It's a classic case of relying too much on the classics. Analysts covering Nike say while other brands have innovated, Nike just kept leaning on classic silhouettes like the Jordan 1 highs and Dunk lows. It doubled the number of Air Jordan 1s released on its sneakers app over the last 4 years and tripled the amount of Dunk lows released in that same time period. Neil, too much nostalgia, not enough innovation. It's been enough to put a dent in even Nike's unshakable allure.
Right. So Nike reported earnings last week and did not excite at all. Sales were pretty flat and its stock continued its downturn 7% last week. And its stock is down 40% over the last 3 years, amounting to a $130 billion wipeout. Right now, CEO John Donahue is undergoing a major restructuring. They cut 2% of their workforce. They're trying to cut costs of $2 billion over the next few years. So they kind of recognize that they're completely off their game right now.
Yeah, they're off their game. And I think part of it is that they haven't been innovating in the right areas. I mean, I will say in the running market, they still have captured the top end performance. Like their Nike Alpha Fly, their marathon shoe, their race shoes are still probably ahead of all the other brands, but kind of those middle of the line shoes, your daily trainers, the thing that most normal runners buy, they really haven't updated or innovated on their legacy. The Nike Pegasus has been around for years now, and it's kind of the same shoe as it was even a decade ago. And while you have things like On, who has their crazy new like cloud cushion technology, it feels more innovative, feels more exciting to people. And so that's part of the reason too why Nike's kind of taking a step back, saying, okay, we're going to stop releasing the same old classics, the same old Jordans, the same old Nike Dunks, and try to introduce some more innovation back into the company, because that's kind of what it's been known for over the years.
Right. They're kind of getting lapped right now by Hoka and On as people start to wear running shoes. Is a huge growing market, not only for people competing and athletes like you, but they are just wearing them to the office now. And as COVID has turned the office into a little more of a casual place, Nike did get a big win in Europe, though, when Germany said it was switching its kit sponsor or its kit manufacturer, which is a fancy way of saying jerseys, from Adidas, which is crazy because Adidas is Germany. It's been the kit supplier for 70 years, and they're switching to Nike, which set off a huge kerfuffle at the highest levels of the government. They accused the German National Football Association of sort of not being patriotic and switching to an American company instead of Germany. So I don't know if you want to call that a win for Nike, but it definitely I don't know if it'll like actually move the needle in any way, but it is kind of an interesting PR situation.
I think it is a major coup for them, because Germany is Adidas. I cannot believe that they let themselves lose the bid to it. Apparently Nike literally doubled the amount that Adidas was paying them. So I guess money talks and you want to develop the football association more. Nike also though is in a bit of a row with the English national team, because they put a cheeky update to the English national flag on the back of England's jerseys. They added some blue and some purples in the flags, and a lot of politicians were like, listen, you don't mess with the flag, bruv. You keep it red. We do not want any blue. We do not want any purple. purple here. It's a national flag for a reason. So either there, it is interesting because the Euros are coming up, which is a big European soccer tournament with national teams. So we're seeing kind of these kits come out. So it is a bit of a microcosm of the larger Nike versus Adidas war. Right now, Adidas has a little bit of a leg up, but obviously Nike, it never quite goes away. Up next, stick around to learn about the most grueling running race in the entire world.
When it comes to your finances, go for the credit card that's always there for you. With 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yup, that means no more waiting for, quote, normal business hours just to get a hold of someone. We're talking real service from real people whenever you need it. Get the customer service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Did you know that even if you have a 401k for retirement, you can still have an IRA? Robinhood has the only IRA that gives you a 3% boost on every dollar you contribute when you subscribe to Robinhood Gold. But get this, now through April 30th, Robinhood is even boosting every single dollar you transfer in from other retirement accounts with a 3% match. That's right, no cap on the 3% match. Robinhood Gold gets you the most for your retirement thanks to their IRA with a 3% match. This offer is good through April 30th. Get started at Robinhood.com/boost. Subscription fees apply. And now for some legal info. Claim as of Q1 2024, validated by Radius Global Market Research. Investing involves risk, including loss. Limitations apply to IRAs and 401ks. 3% match requires Robinhood Gold for 1 year from the date of first 3% match. Must keep Robinhood IRA for 5 years. The 3% matching on transfers is subject to specific terms and conditions. Robinhood IRA available to U.S. customers in good standing. Robinhood Financial LLC, member SIPC, is a registered broker-dealer.
Welcome to Winners of the Weekend, where Toby and I share two people from the week's news that are on top of their bracket pools. I won the pre-show contest, which is appropriate because my winner is Jerry Seinfeld. Now, what's the deal with Jerry? Well, he started off in stand-up comedy, then made a hit sitcom, and yada, yada, yada. He's now a billionaire. Bloomberg calculated that Jerry's fortune has hit $1 billion, mostly thanks to syndication deals from Seinfeld that brought him $465 million. He also has made $100 million from touring since the 80s, $94 million from a Netflix streaming deal, and has about $40 million worth of real estate holdings. Bloomberg didn't even factor in Seinfeld's epic car collection to his net worth, but one estimate revealed that he owns over 150 cars, collectively valued at $100 million. Meanwhile, a separate analysis into Newman's financials found he's $500,000 in debt.
That's gold, Neil. Gold. I was trying to keep track of the amount of Seinfeld references that even I, a non-fan, picked up, and I think I was at 405 there, so congrats on that. This was also not only an interesting look into Seinfeld's finances, but also an interesting look at how these billionaire stats are calculated, because it takes all those income streams, the syndication deal, the Netflix deals, touring deals, and then it also factors in the performance of the MSCI World Index, which is what it sounds like, an index that tracks certain large cap stocks from 23 global developed markets, and basically says that if Seinfeld had put his cash in that market, how much would it appreciate? Which I didn't know was part of the billionaire factor, because I thought you just say, all right, these are the income streams, you add it all together, but it factors in kind of the investment performance side of things. So that was an interesting angle to this billionaire status from Seinfeld.
He might not even be the richest person on the Seinfeld cast, though, because Julia Louis-Dreyfus, her dad was a mogul. It was a billionaire. He's worth $4 billion at the time he died a few years ago. So she is actually super rich.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, no, she's like comes from a billionaire family.
I know we don't get to talk about Seinfeld very often. So any other references you want to get out of your system right now, or was that good enough for you?
No, just one. I got it out of my system. But one thing I thought was funny, Seinfeld had an interview with the New York Times in 2012, and he goes, I like money, but it's never been about the money. But this is a guy who does sort of relish wealth. I think that's a fact.
I don't blame him. My winner of the weekend is the ultra runner Jasmine Paris. On Friday, Jasmine became the first woman to complete the Barkley Marathons, which is world-renowned as one of the hardest, most grueling, most soul-shatteringly difficult races you can ever participate in. It requires participants to run through 100 miles of rugged Tennessee wilderness with a time cutoff of 6 60 hours. Paris ended up completing the race with 1 minute and 39 seconds to spare. Only 20 people have ever completed the 100-mile version of this race, and now Jasmine is one of those. There are no words to describe how hard this race is, Neil. It's a five-loop course. When Jasmine set off on the fifth and final loop, she became the first woman to ever accomplish even that feat, let alone finish. But she got it done. I was surprised at how many people were kind of clued into this. And you were saying you were receiving lots of texts from your friends saying, did you see this Barkley Marathon thing? It does kind of have a allure and a legend of its own right now.
Totally. And it's there was a documentary about it a few years ago. And Lazarus Lake, who is the mythological figure, very Santa bearded guy who runs the competition, is kind of doing a little more media so people are more aware of this. But a few years ago, no one had any clue what was going on. But this is just so wrapped up in so much lore. Lazarus Lake, to start the signal of the race an hour before it starts, the runners have no idea when, he blows a conch shell, and that signals 1 hour before the start. And then the start of the race, it's not, no one shoots a gun at the air. He lights a cigarette, and then they are off into the wilderness. There is no actual map of the course. They have to rely on compasses alone. And the way they know they're on the right track is he's placed 10 to 15 books throughout the loop. You have to tear off a page of the book that corresponds to your bib number.
My favorite part of it, too, is applicants must submit an essay explaining why they wish to compete, and in addition to $1.60 entry fee. Again, just so many random little wrinkles to this. I am not penning my essay anytime soon. This race has the equivalent of 60,000 feet of ascent and descent, which is twice the elevation of Mount Everest. Just notoriously difficult. And Lazarus Lake, the race founder himself, has been on record saying, I don't think a woman will ever be able to finish this. A lot of people are like, why do you say that, Lazarus Lake? But he said, based on times, women tend to be 12% slower in over the ultra marathon distance. Clearly, that turned out to not be the case because Jasmine absolutely crushed it. And I was just fired up because I love whenever the running and ultra running community gets a little extra press. It's March, and whether you are a basketball diehard or got roped into your office pool by Kyle from marketing, let's talk about some of the madness that's emerged from the first weekend of the tournament. On the men's side of things, we had some early Cinderella stories with Oakland University taking down the 3-seeded Kentucky Wildcats and 14-seeded Yale downing Auburn. When the dust had settled on Thursday night's opening game, it had drawn the highest average audience since 2015 per Nielsen. Oakland versus Kentucky had the largest audience for an opening round game since Zion Williamson's led Duke against North Dakota State in 2019. On the women's side of things, the number one seed Iowa and Caitlin Clark cruised through their first round matchup, but last year's NCAA champion LSU is facing some extra scrutiny after its coach, Kim Mulkey, who used a press conference to threaten to sue the Washington Post, who is publishing an unfavorable story about her in the coming days. Neil, there are tons of storylines to this year's tournament, as always. Where do you want to head first?
Let's start with Golkey Mania. This was a senior at Oakland who jacked up a ton of threes and helped Oakland beat Kentucky. This, what happened to him in the span of 12 hours after that particular game, I think shows the power of marketing and virality and name, image, likeness deals that have kind of allowed college athletes to make money now. Barely the Nets hadn't come down on that game when he already signed an NIL deal with TurboTax. He's an accounting major, and he put out a deal with them. He grew his Instagram following from 500 followers to over 50,000. He's already making money through endorsement deals. So the NIL machine works so fast these days, was something I just didn't realize. I mean, he still had a game to play, and in between practice, he's filming TurboTax commercials.
One brand that I think has capitalized very well on the recent NIL rule update is Buffalo Wild Wings, where Buffalo Wild Wings has this deal where if you're at a BW3s during the March Madness and the game goes to overtime, everyone gets 6 free wings in the restaurant. So they've been signing players on teams who go to overtime legit less than 24 hours after the game ends to NIL deals. So Jack Golkey, even though they ended up losing to North Carolina State in the next round, he got an NIL deal from Buffalo Wild Wings, where he's just posing with his wings because his game went to overtime. So it is definitely a different world of college basketball that we're living in, that these stars are able to capitalize so quickly off of their rising star power.
Yeah, and one of the most heartwarming stories has to do with the Yale marching band. They weren't able to go, not marching band, but their band weren't able to go to Spokane for the games. So the University of Idaho band took their place and went to Spokane, drove 90 minutes, learned all of the Yale songs, learned the Yale fight song, put all of the Yale stuff on and wore it. And we're just, I don't know, sometimes you get some nice stories like this.
There's always nice stories coming out of March. Yeah, on the women's side, I'm just rooting for an Iowa-South Carolina final. Those are the two powerhouses. South Carolina has an undefeated season going right now. And I think if we get that matchup in the finals, the women's tournament could end up outdrawing the men's. It was, did it do it last year?
I
can't remember either, but it was definitely more intrigue was around the women's tournament. So I think if that's the matchup we get, then we could outdraw the men's tournament once again.
Okay, let's close the show with a preview of the week ahead. It is busy, busy, busy. First up, Trump's bond deadline is here. New York's attorney general could begin seizing his assets if he doesn't put up a nearly $500 million bond by today. Remember, this stems from last month's civil fraud trial when Trump was ordered to pay $464 million for inflating his net worth. But after being rejected by 30 companies for a bond, his lawyer said that securing one was a practical impossibility.
The practical impossibility might become more possible, though, too, because there's the merger between the blank check company Digital World Acquisition Corp and True Social, his social media company. That was approved on Friday, so it will begin trading here shortly. It's expected to debut at around a $5 billion market value, which would increase Trump's net worth by $3 billion given the stake he owns in the company. In theory, it should help him foot his legal bills, but there are restrictions that prevent him from selling shares immediately for at least 6 months. Technically, though, he controls a lot of sway over the board, so they could waive those. So it might be his get-out-of-jail-free card.
Also, convicted crypto fraudster Sam Bankman-Fried was going to be sentenced in Manhattan on Thursday. Prosecutors want him to serve 40 to 50 years in prison for defrauding millions of people, while SBF's team has proposed 6.5 years, over under 35.
I think it's going to be a slightly under, but not by much. The prosecutors have really not taken well to his approach of, I just got in over my head, yeah, and saying that he's not showing nearly enough remorse here. So I'm going to take the under, but not by much.
On the Supreme Court, the abortion pill mifepristone is on the docket on Tuesday in a really high stakes case that could determine access to the most common form of abortion in America. The case wound its way up to the court after a Texas judge suspended the drug in 2022, citing the FDA's approval process, but a subsequent ruling has allowed the drug to stay on the market. This decision is expected to come in July, right in the thick of election season.
Yeah, even despite Roe v. Wade ruling, overall abortions have not declined in the last few years, and a lot of that has to do with the widespread access to mifepristone, especially because it's accessible by mail. So this is clearly another very important case in when it comes to reproductive rights.
Yep. And finally, Beyonce's country album Cowboy Carter drops on Friday, which is the second of a three-act project that began with Renaissance a year and a half ago. Beyonce said the album was born of an experience she had years ago where she did not feel welcomed, which is a reference to her performance at the CMA Awards with the Dixie Chicks that was criticized by some in the country music industry.
Yeah. I love this, the two songs she's released so far, Texas Hold'em and 16 Carriages. I listen to it when I'm prepping for the show. It's kind of just become an anthem for me. So I know it sounds crazy to prep to Beyonce country music, but don't knock it till you try it.
So we're all really excited for that on Friday. Also on Friday is Good Friday, so the markets will be closed, and then Easter Sunday.
We'll be open, though. We will be right here in the studio on Good Friday.
Okay, we have to wrap it up there. Have a wonderful start to the week, and make sure to head to Morning Brew's socials this morning to vote on the greatest invention of all time. If you have any thoughts on the show, don't keep it to yourself. Send an email to morningbrewdaily@morningbrew.com and you can be sure we'll read it. Let's roll the credits. Emily Milliron is our executive producer. Raymond Liu is our producer. Olivia Graham is our associate producer. Uchenna Ogu is our technical director. Billy Menino is on audio. Hello, hair and makeup. Devin Emery is our chief content officer, and our show is a production of Morning Brew.
Great show today, Neil. Let's run it back tomorrow.